In 2004, Conor Grennan had saved enough money to take a trip around the world, and he began his journey in Nepal, where he volunteered to work for 3 months at an orphanage. That country was in the midst of a civil war at the time, and some parents sent their children to the yet unoccupied Kathmandu Valley on promises of schooling and safety. But their children were, in fact, victims of traffickers. When Mr. Grennan learned this, he set out to reunite the families, and he's written about his experiences in Little Princes, which is published by William Morrow. I'm very pleased that it has brought Conor Grennan to our show today. Welcome.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm a big fan.
Before you decided to travel around the world, you'd worked for years at the East-West Institute, which has headquarters in Prague and Brussels. Was that in any way related to what you wound up doing?
No, I don't think so. It was really the beginning of a long adventure that I think I took. But no, when I first went to Nepal, it was really because I was traveling around the world. And I stopped off in Nepal because I figured I should do some volunteering because people were basically guilting me into it. And it also turned out that
they were guilting you into it? They weren't just saying, great, you could take a trip around the world, enjoy yourself?
You'd think that they would. You'd think that they would. They really didn't. And so that first, you know, made me think, okay, I better volunteer. And then I found out that, you know, and I hate to say this to your well-respected audience, but, you know, the fact was that if you tell women that you're volunteering in an orphanage in Nepal, this is a fantastic pickup line. And that sort of kind of got me motivated initially.
And eventually you did meet your wife through this.
So. Oh, miraculously, yeah.
What were your first impressions of the country when you arrived? How aware were you of the civil war that was going on? That was the Maoist rebels? And then also, wasn't the monarchy in serious disarray at the time?
Absolutely. The monarchy was in disarray for a long time. In 2002, I believe it was, the crown prince killed most of his family there. I didn't really know about the civil war at all. I was, you know, concentrating on the beaches of Thailand that I was going to be hitting right after Nepal. So even though I was coming for 3 months, you know, I realized that, you know, there was probably something going on, but I didn't realize it was a full-scale war. And when I got to the Little Prince's Children, the book is called Little Princes because it's named after the Little Prince's Children's Home where I was volunteering. It was staggering to see all these army people around.
Well, you describe an initial reluctance toward doing volunteer work and also working with children. Why didn't you take it seriously at first?
Well, I'm not sure if it was I took it seriously or not. I have to admit again that I just didn't really like children. I mean, you know, the reason I thought to pick an orphanage was it just sounded so cool and exotic and you know, made women swoon. And
how many women were you telling that you were working at this?
Everybody
orphanage?
Who walked into my path. I mean, you know, everybody I could find. But then eventually I was out in Nepal and by myself and I walked in and was just sort of surrounded by these kids and realized I didn't know anything about kids. And
you didn't speak Nepalese?
Not a word. Not a word. And so I'm sure they were talking about me behind my back the entire time. But, you know, you just kind of get there and, you know, you're in this tiny village in Nepal in a place that you've never been before. And suddenly these kids are jumping all over you and you know, I made some kind of embarrassing mistakes early on, but, you know, I came to really enjoy the kids.
Well, what was a typical day at Little Prince Orphanage like?
Mostly me trying not to screw up too much. It was, you know, you'd get up pretty early. It was a very simple life out in the village. Very often school was closed because the Maoist rebels were essentially in power, really. The king was technically in power, but the Maoist rebels had taken over the entire country, even really the Kathmandu Valley, which meant that they would just close schools constantly. So for a lot of the day, we were actually trying to teach the children ourselves, and I didn't have any capacity to teach. And so, again, I probably set the kids back by a few years trying to teach.
Well, did the kids ever talk to you about what had happened with them?
Not really. They spoke about where they were from, which was a place called Humla, and that's in the far northwest corner of the country, right near Tibet. A lot of people confuse Nepal and Tibet.
Were these people a Tibetan people, or were they more Nepalese?
They were Nepalese, but I think, you know, sort of historically they'd come over the mountains from Nepal, and we're talking about the high Himalaya here, Everest and such. So the kids talked about where they were from. They talked about how dangerous it was. But they never in that time said anything except that they were orphans.
A French woman who worked with you at the orphanage informed you that the children weren't really orphans.
Yeah, well, you would think that she would have known. And in fact, she had suspected it, but she had never actually found out. What actually happened was we were there in the orphanage one day. This is after this French woman had left. And I was hanging out with the kids, and this woman comes down the path, and we thought, well, why is this woman coming to visit this orphanage? And she comes in, and she says, I believe you have two of my children here. And we were blown away. And she came in, and she told us this whole story. Keep in mind that we'd been there almost a year. The kids had never told us that they were orphans. And she told us this incredible story of these Maoist rebels taking these children into the army. And these are in villages that are so remote, it would take a week to walk to the nearest road. They have no concept of electricity or cars or anything else. And suddenly, they figured out, wow, we have to save our children. And they ended up giving them to this man who they thought would take them to safety in the Kathmandu Valley, give them an education. And in fact, he took all these kids, took them over the mountains, brought them into Kathmandu, and essentially did a few things. He either sold them as slaves, these children, or more diabolically, what he started to do was put these children up for international adoption.
But the parents also would pay this guy to save their children, thinking that he was taking them to some school in safety.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to put out this book, Little Princes, was the fact that this is a kind of trafficking that people just don't know about. Neither did I, right? I
mean, we think about sex trafficking, and you say there was some of that involved here.
There was, but usually the parents are the ones being paid. In this case, they were paying for the privilege of getting their kids out of the villages and into Kathmandu. These men were then, again, putting these children up for international adoption, which the United States finally closed in 2010 because they realized these kids had families. But the other thing is that we started to realize was that it wasn't just that they were selling kids. They were actually bringing in volunteers to volunteer. Volunteers would donate. Volunteers would send money. In fact, the single biggest way that child traffickers in Nepal are making money today, right now, is through volunteers from America.
So these kids are what are called paper orphans?
Exactly. Paper orphans because we have, I would literally go into the mountains to try to find the families of these children with death certificates of their parents, believing that they were dead. And next thing I knew, I'd be meeting the father whose death certificate I was holding in my hand.
So I'm not sure I understand. You obviously couldn't track their parents down by doing a Google search or whitepages.com Nepal, but you did have some clues as to how to find the parents, and you decided that's what you were going to do?
Yeah.
Is this before you created your NGO? Or?
This was the creation of the NGO. I mean, we discovered that there were more and more children who had been brought into Kathmandu, trafficked into Kathmandu, and we realized we had to do something about them, but there was no way to get into the mountains to try to find the family. And so what we decided to do was actually go into the mountains ourselves. I didn't know how to do it, but I basically flew a plane as deep into the mountains as I could, put on a backpack, found a local guide, and walked through all these Maoist-controlled territories in the mountains of the Himalaya looking for the parents based only on photographs of the children.
Well, you must have stood out like a sore thumb.
A sore thumb would have been a kind way to describe me at the time. I had no idea what I was doing whatsoever. I'm pretty much the last person you want walking through the mountains looking for these parents.
I have a friend right now who is taking a trip around the world. I doubt that he's going to come back as the head of an NGO, but that's what happened with Conor Grennan. And he tells that story in his new book, called Little Princes, which was the New York Times bestseller when it was released in hardcover, subtitled One Man's Promise to Bring Home the Lost Children of Nepal. It's published by William Morrow. So you created this NGO called Next Generation Nepal. How did you support it and raise funds?
Well, it was really difficult. I mean, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know all about the hardships of the NGO world, it's really just begging and borrowing and, just asking for people for any kind of donation whatsoever.
But you were going on the internet, I assume.
Absolutely. I mean, what I was doing was I was blogging when I was out in Nepal, and I just found that people were really following the stories. The funny thing is I never intended to write a book or anything else, but, a lot of things happened out there. As it turned out, I did meet my wife, Liz, out there. She was coming out as a fellow volunteer. I sort of fell head over heels in love with her and proposed to her probably about 3 weeks after I met her. But I just realized that this was something that had to be told, and I kept blogging about it without any intention of writing a book until, an agent approached me in 2009. I was in business school in NYU. And asked me to write this book.
And you were already, you were still running the NGO at this point?
Yeah, I was still running Next Generation.
Is this thing still happening? Is this a constant problem that you have these paper orphans and then your group or other people have to then reunite the kids with their parents?
Sure. I wish I could say that in 2006 when the war ended, that solved all our problems. In fact, it did.
The Maoists wound up becoming part of the government, didn't
well,
they?
Well, it's extraordinary that the king was kicked out. The Maoists became the government. But what we're seeing, again, is that volunteers who have nothing but goodness in their heart to go out and help these children in Nepal are actually the ones that are providing the most revenue for the traffickers in Nepal. It's a huge, huge issue. Again, I know families here in New York and other families in America that have adopted from Nepal and only to find out later that their children actually have parents back in Nepal.
Well, most of the people you were working with foreigners, or were there also Nepalese volunteers?
It was a mix. For the most part, it was foreigners. And again, all of us were a little bit clueless. It only, you know, you have to stay there for a little while to get the culture a little bit. But
did you ever learn to speak any of the language?
I spoke enough.
I mean, you were only there 3 months when this
happened. Well, I was there for 3 months, and then I came back a year later and stayed for another 3 months. And then I moved to Nepal to really try to, you know, search for 7 children that had been kidnapped from us, but also to try to find the families of all these children. And what started with, you know, looking for 24 families, we've now, you know, thanks to the success of this book, Little Princes, we've been able to find many, many more, about 500 families. So it just kind of keeps on going.
You talk about your friend Farid, a young Frenchman and fellow volunteer. How did the two of you meet?
Yeah, we were both volunteering there, and we both just found that we were passionate about helping these kids after some time. And Farid and I still work together. He's still the country director of Next Generation Nepal. And again, you know, the book Little Princes is actually named for Le Petit Prince, because most of the children who are taken are actually boys. And so they're the ones that, you know, the family thinks that they should get an education. So it was named after the Le Petit Prince.
What was your first reunification like?
It was extraordinary. I was, you know, in the mountains. A lot of things had gone wrong. I had gotten snowed into the mountains. I had gotten hurt. And again, I'm, you know, probably 2 weeks away from any kind of road or anything else. I was really stuck out there. And I thought, man, I hope I find at least one family. And all I was going on were basically photos of children. And when I found the mother there, I expected it to be this, you know, real kind of tearful reunion, sort of very joyous. In fact, it was a lot more complicated than that. First of all, the children didn't speak the same language as the mother anymore. They'd been trafficked so long ago. Second of all, the children had been really urbanized, I think. And so it was very strange to think, you know, these mothers were afraid of taking their children back, not because they didn't love them, but because how can we provide for them?
What, did most of the parents think that their kids had died or were safely in some school?
You know,
what did they think would have happened to their kids?
This is a great question. It's not something I've ever been able to figure out exactly, but from talking to parents, what I've found was that, and I am a parent now, you know, Liz and I had Finn and Lucy, our two young children, but what I found out was that I think parents, even after 4 years of never hearing from their children, something that, you know, they just hold on to it. And so when they've never seen a Caucasian person like myself, and all of a sudden when I come through their village, first of all, they've never seen anybody like me. Second of all, I pull out a photo of their child who's aged 4 years. To them, it's something like the miracle that maybe they were always expecting.
It seems that your first meeting with Liz, your future wife, was something of a miracle as well. It wasn't You didn't just meet her at the airport.
I wish I had just met her at the airport. I would have smelled a lot better. You know, the fact was that Liz was coming out to volunteer. I was actually stuck in the mountains. As I said, I was looking for these families. A lot of things went wrong. I was waiting for a helicopter on the top of this mountain for 5 days, and the helicopter never came. And it was just this, all of a sudden, I realized I was going to miss Liz. She was coming to Kathmandu. There was no communications. They've never seen a phone in this part of the world in their entire lives. And I almost killed myself, literally almost killed myself, trying to get back and meeting Liz, and I just did just in time.
You describe a dramatic standoff between child traffickers and next generation volunteers. What happened?
Yeah, I wish I wasn't a part of that. But, you know, the fact is that when these men want the children, these children are extremely valuable. Again, when they were getting adopted, the reason they were putting them up for international adoption is in a country where the average annual salary is $300 a year, these traffickers were making $5,000 for each child they put up. And so when they wanted a child and we had a child, you know, it turned into actual a physical altercation. And it's not something that if you see me, you know that I'm not the person for that. But
well, do the Nepalese police get involved in any of this?
Only through the corruption side. I mean, we've made friends with one of the police chiefs and he did help us. We made friends with the mayor and he tried to help us. But for the most part, when these children were getting adopted, you know, they were finding infants, and I'm putting in air quotes, kind of infants down by the river. The fact is that policemen could make a lot of money by kind of quote unquote finding these children.
So these traffickers are never prosecuted?
Not only are they never prosecuted, but the main villain in the book Little Princes is a man named Golka. And everybody asked me, oh, what happened to Golka? He trafficked something like 1,200 children in the course of his few years there. You know, is he put in jail? And I have to say no. In fact, he's now the head of a political party in Nepal.
Do you have any advice for people who want to work or volunteer in a place like Nepal?
Yeah, I think to get in touch with people like Next Generation Nepal to You know, I have to say that I would really advise people to read Little Princes. Again, we donate a portion.
Well, of course you're telling people to read this book. You wrote it. Well, you get royalties.
Well, I get royalties, but what you see on the back there is that we donate a portion of the proceeds right back to Next Generation Nepal. We've built a home for the kids out there just by people, you know, from buying this book. But more importantly, what they see is that, wow, I never understood that just by finding these orphanages through the internet, that a lot of these are actually run by traffickers. And people have to understand the story and get in touch with us.
Little Princes was a New York Times bestseller when it was released in hardcover, now available from William Morrow in paperback. Thank you so much, Connor Grennan, for coming by to talk about it.
Thanks, Leonard.